Can you tell us something about your own, because you are a father for a long time, and you're experiencing that also in different environments, you're living over
right.
Like something from your life, something like from your...
Okay. Well, I'll tell you even the bare truth, they might like to say. I grew up and my parents were very, very liberal. They didn't require me to go to any sort of spiritual temple, church, synagogue. It didn't matter. They said, do what you want. And I was very, very athletic. So I did, you know, Sundays I was, you know, playing football or playing something. But then somewhere around, you know, 10 years old, I got a very difficult chronic disease. And so my parents hauled me off to even Mayo Clinic, and they said, you know, he's going to live for maybe 5 more years. This is a degenerative kidney disease. He's going to be finished. It's over. And then from that, I started thinking, well, is there anything beyond life? Again, I was getting no training, and I had no background and no upbringing. But then I started just from the fact that death was looming, I was asking the question, is there anything more, anything beyond death? And even though I was asking that question, I was very stubborn. I didn't care. Okay? But one thing that I'm sure, that God was more stubborn. God kept the disease degenerating to the point that even I thought, well, you know, at this point, I actually lived further than they said. I went to university. I was studying comparative religions. I started giving lecture, and then I decided to go to India, and I figured I'm going to die soon. I had to actually stop my career at one point because I was just too sick. And then, okay, I'll tell you the whole thing. I was traveling in India not knowing anything. Even though I had studied advanced a comparative religion, the name Ramana Maharshi never came across my eyesight. So many others just wasn't there. Just wasn't meant to be. So actually, I was traveling to southern India. This is 1969 and 70. Finished with school, the whole thing. About to, you know, I thought, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. And I came upon an ashram. They were teaching some Ayurvedic studies, and I thought, well, great, he can teach me a thing, I'll feel better. Okay? And so they said, we're in the middle of this 4 or 5 week period, but you can't drop in the middle of the course. You can. There's a little garden, and it was a little, you know, house there, you could stay there. And so for a couple weeks, and then of course being American, he figured out I had money, and I had little, but he charged me a lot, so I just was there. And there was a monk that was there also. And he slept all day. And when he wasn't sleeping, he was reading the newspaper. And he was real heavy, jolly look. And I figured, I'm going to learn nothing from this guy. So I'm just waiting. And then I was starting to wake up from time to time at night. And I look over, and this monk was always meditating. All night, every night, sitting like a rock in meditation. So now again, I've had no spiritual training. No aspiration. No longing. No love of God. Nothing. The only thing I had was death was a little frightening, and I thought maybe I was thinking about God because it was, you know, an alternative to facing death. So I said to this monk once, now that I realized he knows something because he's meditating all night, I said, can you teach me something? Can you tell me anything? He said, yeah. Leave this place. That was the teaching. He said, go. Get away from this place. He said, where do I go? He said, there's a town called Tiruvannamalai, and there's a saint whose name is Sri Ramana Maharshi, who lived there and left his body in 1950. You go there. Okay? And he said, when you get to the ashram, you tell the manager, I know nothing. He's explaining this, I don't know anything. And the town, couldn't even spell the name. He said, you be sure to tell him that you were told to come. Okay? So I went. This is 1970, early 70. And the old Venkataraman there was there, and the office was different. It was just a table like this with India. Amazing how they can do it. Piles of papers, just really like disorganized. The little guy was sitting there. And it was hardly anyone around. And I said, can I come and stay and, you know, and learn about Sri Ramana Maharshi? And he said, no, there's no room for you. Get out. And he was really cut, of course. So I started turning around and walking away. Then I remembered what this Swami said, and I just turned and said, can you... then I said, well, I was told to come. He goes, okay, come. It's pure India, you know. So I went there, and then I walked up. I knew nothing, but I remember two things that struck me. When I got there, it was late in the afternoon, and so I went into this Samadhi shrine. And at that time, you know, if you go to the ashram, there's a big life-size kind of lit up from the back kind of box light of Ramana Maharshi standing there. Right now, it's in the back where they moved it. That was in the front, leaning up against on the right side, and it was lit up. And there were 6 or 8 or 10 ladies, a couple men. And ladies were there looking at it, and most of them were just weeping. Some of them had japa malas, some were just crying. And the vibration, I had never experienced anything else like that. The fact that here's people, and I knew that he had left his body, so now there's a picture, they're weeping. And the feeling just started like something happened. Just the idea of people crying for God. I was crying because my body was going to drop dead. That was the only reason. And then I went up to this Gandhashram, and actually something happened, which, you know, I don't really want to talk about much, but something happened, and I realized, okay, if you can dedicate yourself and try to live a complete spiritual life, you'll be okay. Those were kind of the words. So I only had a 3-month visa. And as soon as I said, okay, I'll dedicate my... This is when we're talking about suffering. You think high school's bad? Listen to this. I said, yes, I'll go back and I'll become, you know, I'll look for a monastery for as many years or months, wherever I had left. From that moment, you know, there was, my passage was across land. I'd come from Luxembourg down by land. You couldn't go back through Afghanistan. There's a war going on. Then there was some kind of, as there is always, Iran and Iraq were fighting some war. So I had to, with the little money I had, and I was very sick at that time, I got what's called deck passage from Bombay to Basra, Iraq. Deck passage was open on the deck. It was nothing. And then when I got off, I got sick. I had to go to a place, and then I was literally trying to hitchhike across the desert. This is after I said, oh God, I'm going to give you my life. And he's turned the heat up, you know. And it just went on and on and on. Then finally, miraculously, I found an ashram, and I went in, and it wasn't easy.
Huh? Then here you are.
Yeah, 34 years later. So you see, when I say that God was more stubborn, I mean, so it must be from a past life. It must be, because it's pure grace. I was doing nothing. In fact, the brakes were on. You know? But, and so in my case, God said, the only way I'm going to get through to this fool is to, like, threaten to take away his life. That's what happened. And pure grace. And many things happened wonderfully. I mean, you know, the ashram that I found was an ashram for Ananda Moy Ma. And I'll tell you one quick story, which also is kind of important, because we've talked about this idea of when you take to spiritual life, you have some dryness. And it's a little bit of a problem. It's a big problem, not a little bit of a problem. Because, you know, you might say, well, I've been following a spiritual practice for some time, and it's different than what I was raised, and I don't like, you know, my parents' religion, and everything just seems a little kind of vague. Well, almost immediately, within a few months, and this was an Orthodox Brahminical ashram run by Sri Anandamayi Maharaj, who was really, like, the temple was there. It was Sri Rama, Sita, Lakshman, Hanuman, Anandamayi Maharaj, Sri Ramakrishna, Shiva was there. Within some months, I was made the pujari. I had no tendency toward it. I was taught the mantras. I was taught this, everything, you know, and like it was solid from 2:30 in the morning to 8 or 9 at night, taking care of deities. I mean, it's a Hindu Brahminical way. You're feeding them, you're bathing them, you're doing worship, it's all solid. And I was doing this. And inside, it was totally mechanical and dry, with nothing in my heart. Okay? And we're talking about living deities. I mean, miracles were happening. I mean, I remember one miracle that was very profound. These images of Rama, Sita, Lakshman, Hanuman were, you know, like 18, 20 inches tall. We were poor as could be. We saved our money, mortgaged the house. It was a pretty big property, to gold plate the images. So we did it. And so I was doing the worship, and we had like stones in setting. They were artificial, you know, gems, glass. And, you know, you do the worship, and you bathe them and everything. You start, you dress them and put jewels on, really the Hindu Brahminical way, in the most elaborate way with what we could afford. And I remembered once that I was doing the worship. It was time I was actually dressing them, and I was putting some jewels on Sita Devi, who's the, you know, the Sita is the goddess who came into incarnation with Sri Rama. And my mind was somewhere else. I was just thinking about, you know, something stupid and distracted. And as I would, what we do is just soften a little beeswax and put it on the setting, and just, you know, if it's on the, it's a, you put it on the wrist or if an earring. And I was just being, I was really being distracted, and my hand slipped and kind of with this setting went across her cheek. And Hanuman was down below, and I literally hear him go, I growled. This is an image who growled. And I'll tell you, like, I became so frightened. I was never again, you know, careless, but still the dryness was there. And it was mechanical. So finally, after months, 8 months or 9 months, it became my turn, because we were really poor, and we only took turns coming to India and being with Mother Anandamayi and traveling with her. And then we only got 3 months, because we only could stay 6 weeks. And I could stay less than anyone, because I had to come back for the ritual worship. I wanted to ask this question. I wanted to say, you know, like, okay, you're the guru. You surely know I've got this problem. Okay, I've taken up this life. I've you know, transformed everything externally, but inside it's dry. It's like dead. It's just mechanical. There's no devotion. You know, there's some fear, no devotion. And I wanted to ask her the question, like, how can I fix this? And I remember, you know, I was, you know, the first day, couldn't get a chance. Then I was sitting in front of her thinking about this, thinking. But I wasn't the only one there, so I couldn't just start talking to her because, you know, you don't do it. You get an opportunity, possibly. She just leaned over and she kind of went like that. Just went two or three times over my head. There was an explosion inside of me. And then when I kind of came back to my senses, the dryness was gone. So you see, I did very little other than the fact that I knew there was indifference, but I got to the point it was not willing indifference. I wanted it to change. Okay? That's the key. Now this reminds me of this great story of Girish Chandra Ghosh, who was one of the disciples of Sri Ramakrishna. Paramahansa Sri Ramakrishna, who lived, he was considered an avatar of God. He was a Bengali saint, more than a saint. And Girish Chandra Ghosh at that time, he was an actor, manager, and composer of what's called the Star Theatre in Calcutta, the most famous theatrical theatre. And he actually wrote his reminiscences, and this story comes from his own writing, his own hand. All the plays were religious plays. It was either a performance of the life of Sri Krishna or Rama or some, you know, episode of divine leela in man. And he would write all of the script, perform it with a whole group and the troupe of the theater troupe. And then after it was over, he'd get rip-roaring drunk every night. And every night he would go off to a house of prostitution. And he was his disciple, Sri Ramakrishna, at the same time. And this is like someone who's considered God. And so he's living this life, falling down, you know, before this great being. And he's leading this promiscuous life. This doesn't even come close to the right word. One night after the performance, he and his friend had gotten so drunk, they were reeling their way toward the house of prostitution. And he said to his friend, you know, it doesn't matter what karma. He said, you know, every night we do this. For a change, let's go visit the saint. You know, so the friend said, no, you go. So he went. So he went, he fell down drunk in front of Sri Ramakrishna. I'm just talking about Sri Ramakrishna. This is the caliber of Bhagavan Ramana Maharshi. This is like people thought he was really. He was working miracles. He was changing lives. He was very divine. He fell down drunk. And Sri Ramakrishna started giving him advice, you know, like strict advice. And Girish says, he just raises his hand and says, stop. Don't give me any advice. It's going to do no good. You know, this is the way I am. But then he had the karma. He said, your advice will do no good. He even said, you know, and I write the script of, you know, how divine beings came into the world and they gave advice to their disciples. I write that stuff. I'm writing better stuff than your advice you're giving me. And I do it by the cartload. So, you know, forget it. But then he said, but, O Thakur, or O Sri Ramakrishna, you do something to transform my life. He said that. In this state. And then the disciples that were there around him, they said they were just aghast at what happened. They said a slight smile, just a slight smile, played across the lip of Sri Ramakrishna. And at that moment, Girish was just physically transformed right in front of their eyes. You could see it. It just, the master just slightly smiled. His whole being was transformed. So, I mean, you know, what do? I mean, you just, you stick with it, but you have to say, God, more, more. But then even so, the character of Girish Ghosh later, after that experience, he couldn't talk about it for some days. People said, what was it like? You know, you're obviously a changed being. And he said this. He said, if I would have known that there was such a huge pit that I could throw all my sins into, meaning I could just lay it all to Master and he'd take it all, he said, I would have committed a lot more. And that nature, that mind, but along with all of that, that you know, personality, that humanity, there was this reliance on God. And it started small. And so, I mean, I can't even say that I'm anywhere near that. But God knows what it takes. What Jesus said, I'm a fisher of men. You know? He knows the bait that's going to catch us. Sometimes it's sweet, sometimes it's smelly squid. What we're going to go after, he's going to catch us. And then one of the names of Sri Ramana Maharshi, when they give his 108 names, is the tiger's mouth. Once you're in, you're only going in one direction. You're going in. And like a tiger sometimes likes to dangle the prey, you know, and you suffer a little. But you realize, okay, if there's a greater purpose. But I can tell you one thing that, as we said, you know, the Sri Ramana Maharshi said, number one, the first verse of the 108 verses to Arunachala. Thou dost root out the ego of those who meditate on thee in the heart. So we might not know where the heart is, but if we meditate and pray, that's as much as we can do. We might study scripture if it's our temperament to study scripture and like try to get inspiration from it. If none of that is seems to be, you know, what we're interested in, we could just lead good, clean lives and help people, try to uplift people. And then God will have mercy on us. But one of the keys that Bhagavan said, this surrender. You just surrender. And the word surrender, it's interesting because it comes, the word in Sanskrit is saranagati. It comes from the root Sanskrit, sharanam. Which is interesting because the root that comes from sharanam is sara. Sara means an arrow. It means you go to God like an arrow. You're like, an arrow will pierce through even the densest fog. You know, it'll like just keep going. That's the surrender. We're not talking about say, okay, God, I'm just like a dog. I'm going to kick my legs up in the air and lay on my back and do whatever the hell you want with me. No, you just like say, this is what I know, what I've been told, what I've read, what I believe, what, you know, the spiritual practice, whatever it is. You just say, this is it, and you go toward it. And all the scriptures of all the religions say, you choose one path and you do it. And you just keep with it. And if prayer is there alongside of it, God's grace will come in God's good time. So the perseverance has to be kind of like the main thing. And so, but that's how these great ones did it. And again, we read, which is not on this recording, after our meditation from Talks 107, where Paramahansa Yogananda is speaking, to Bhagavad. And after this, I'll tell that story of Sri Murugan, which is the goal, the greatest aspect. Paramahansa Yogananda in Talks 107, it's in 1936, he says to Bhagavan. Now, of course, Yogananda had been now 15 years in America, suffering. It wasn't all bliss. In fact, he said himself, this was published in early books of SRF, some of it possibly has been edited out, he said, I lived 14 years of hell. This is Paramahansa Yogananda. You know, when he first came to America and he went to Boston, you know, long hair, dressed like an Indian monk, they threw rotten tomatoes at him. He couldn't stay. And even though he was considered Aryan or light-skinned, he had to stay in the ghettos. And they threw rotten vegetables at him. And it was just on and on and on, and like, he kept up. At one point, even there's a book, which now is out of print, where it says, even in Encinitas, he was weeping. He was on his room weeping because of his loneliness for India and loneliness for the life of, you know, that land. And it said that Sri Ramakrishna himself appeared on his bed, held him in his lap, and stroked his head. And then that's there. And so, but in 1936, he comes. When he came back to India to live with his guru left his body. So the time he had yearned for, he lived and endured 14 years of, yes, it was hell, but also there were good parts, and it was his work, and he sacrificed, and Divine Mother was with him always. When he came to be with his guru for at least that short period, his guru died. He had to bury his guru. Then he traveled to India, and he came and he asked this. He said to Bhagavan, why does God permit suffering in the world? Should he not, with his omnipotence, do away with it at one stroke and ordain the universal realization of God? And then Bhagavan said, suffering is the way to the realization of God. And the yogi said, should he not have ordained differently? And Bhagavan said, it is the way. So, how do you find God? Well, if we happen to be suffering, keep it up. And the world is very happy to cooperate. Okay, but listen. At the end of Sri Muruganar's life, this is something I've told only privately, but frankly, let's speak about this. Srinivasan, who was his attendant toward the end, when he left his body and he was in Chennai, he himself told me this. Now, Srinivasan, I have to tell you, he was a real frail man, but his character was impeccable. He didn't elaborate a dot when he told stories. It was the pure truth. You knew it. Even if he said something that was just almost unbelievable, you knew it was the truth, because he was just this so humble and so pure and so truthful. And he said this. Now, this is at the end of Sri Muruganar's life, that Sri Muruganar was ill, and it was the early afternoon, and he was sleeping in a room taking a nap, and it was the hot time of the year, and so the shutters were closed, but some light was coming through into the room, enough light that you could see through the slats. And so the time came for maybe him to give him some tea or something to refreshment and wake him up, and Srinivasan himself said he opened the door and peered in. And he said, I saw with my own eyes. This is in like 1960-something. This is 10 years after Ramana Maharshi had left his physical body. He said, I looked into the room and I saw Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharshi, fully visible, seated at the head of the bed, stroking the head of Sri Muruganar. Then he said, and I looked a little down and I saw a second Bhagavan. Two visible forms, the same. And he was holding the disciples' feet. And the most wonderful thing, even if you could imagine seeing this, two appearances, I mean, it would stagger the mind if you saw one. But it would just almost, you couldn't comprehend it, see two. He didn't think, he said, in my mind, it's not like, oh, I'm having a vision of Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharshi. He said, what consumed my mind was, what kind of character, what kind of a being could be a disciple that would cause the master to come and stroke his head and hold his feet. The greatness of the disciple was far out shining the actual appearance of the master. And so, I mean, that's why I say when the end is good, it's really worth it. Okay. So may God bless us, keep us. May Bhagavan bless us. May all the gods and saints bless and keep us and bring us. Like Bhagavan said, may they enter our home and lure us to their home. May we find the bait really attractive. Home, home, home.